Hare Hare Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so disillusion and recreation. When he, whose power is incomprehensible, had thus produced the universe and men, he disappeared in himself, repeatedly suppressing one period by means of another. When that divine one wakes, then this world stirs, and when he slumbers tranquilly, then the universe sinks into sleep. Okay. So at the Because the, how do you say, with Lord Brahma lives the thousand-headed Purusha, right? This is talked about in the Purusha Shukta. So this is, how do you say, he is the universal form. He is, you know, Kirudakshaya Vishnu. He is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So when, at the end of Brahma's night, when he sleeps, then all the living entities, they all sleep also. So we look at it as Brahma's night, when he sleeps, but it's actually when the thousand-headed Vishnu sleeps. That's the main thing. Okay. And so then in the morning when he awakes, then Brahma will recreate again. Right, so the end of his night, and that then there'll be his night is a thousand cycles. We'll get into time a little later, but a thousand of the yuga cycles will be his night. There'll be a disillusion up to Brahmaloka, right? So Satyaloka is the only one left. Everything else is destroyed. So then in the morning he recreates everything again like he did before. So it's something he does every day. Right, so it means if you're going to be the creator, you might as well do something, right? So he does it every day, right?
Like that. So the heavenly planets?
Heavenly planets destroyed everything. Even Maharjana and Tapa are destroyed, but the residents of those planets go up to Brahmaloka and spend the night. So they sleep over at Satyaloka. Like that. But everybody below, in other words, all those who are attached to fruitive work, they're all destroyed. And everybody who's working on the platform of Naishkarmya, right, either through yoga, through meditation, through analyzation, or, you know, just engaging all their activities without desire for the results, they remain. All, everybody else is destroyed.
Where are those souls?
The souls, they rest in Lord Vishnu. The means it's the same person. It's basically, I say.
In Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, he's called Mahapurush.
Yeah, the Mahapurush. Because the same thing, it's just like universal form. It's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, the same time as Kirudakshaya Vishnu. See, because the entering everything as, you know, Brahman, that's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, the attractive feature of everything. But the control of it, that's Kirudakshaya Vishnu. So depending on how you present it, it's not, it's the office that's important. Does that make sense? Yes, no?
Yes.
Where the souls go at night?
Like, they go inside the Lord. They rest in Vishnu.
Inside the universe?
Inside the universe, yeah. Okay, at the end of that day and night, he who is asleep awakes, and after awakening creates mind, which is both real and unreal. Okay, we're coming after that. Mind impelled by Brahma's desire to create performs the work of creating by modifying itself. Thence ether is produced. They declare that sound is the quality of the latter. And from ether modifying itself springs the pure, powerful wind, the vehicle of all perfumes. That is held to possess the quality of touch. Next, from wind modifying itself proceeds the brilliant light, which illuminates and dispels darkness. That is declared to possess the quality of color. And from light modifying itself produced water, possessing the quality of taste. From water, earth, which is the quality of smell, which is the creation of the beginning. So the mind is modifying itself. So that's why it's so important, this element of the mind and the five senses. Because the five senses are connected to the, how you say, the sense objects, they're coming from the five Mahabhutas. Right? Because when you give any one of the five, it includes the other two sets of five. Right? Because the sense includes the sense objects, includes what it's made out of. Right? Because if we have how you say, so you have smell. So it means you have smell, so you have the nose, and so you have earth. Right? So that way you have 15. Right? Then you have the mind as the 16th. So you can say that is everything. So when you say the mind, it includes those. I mean, when you say the senses, it includes those other 10. Right? It also includes the working senses. Right? And when you say the mind, it also includes false ego and intelligence. So just by saying the mind and those five, right? So depending on what is the element, it will bring out which aspect, right? So now it's bringing out the aspect of the tan matra, or the sense itself. Not the nose, but smell, touch, taste. Like, does that make sense? Like, that's called tan matras. But when he reposes in calm sleep, the corporal beings whose nature is action desist from their actions, and mind becomes inert. Right, so they stop action; the mind is inert. So they're asleep. When they are absorbed all at once in that great soul, when he who is the soul of all beings sweetly slumbers, free from all care and occupation. So here's the point: is they all go back and are absorbed into the Lord. Right, and so then they. Okay. When this individual soul has entered darkness, it remains for a long time united with the organs of sensation, but performs not its functions. It then leaves the corporal frame. Right? So without having the gross body, it's just in the subtle body. So everything is, well, the mind means it includes all those others. So it's just sitting there with everything, but nothing's happening. Yes?
When it says the mind becomes inert just before, when we're sleeping, the mind doesn't become inert, so is this...
Oh, that means that's not such good sleep.
No,
so
exactly.
This means this is good sleep. Yeah.
I mean, so the difference between when we're sleeping and when we're materially dead,
it's like deep sleep. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, if you don't have a restful sleep, it's hard to be very active the next day. But if you have a very good restful sleep, then you can be active. So... remember is that one has been active for, 4,300,000,000 years. So you get a nap that long, so that you're ready for the next 4,300,000,000 years with great enthusiasm. Otherwise, it just won't work. Right.
When this mind is alert, you're in the night
coma? Yes. Yeah, it means this is all happening in the night. See, because it says disillusion and recreation. So we've defined creation. So now disillusion means in Brahma's night, right? Then everything's destroyed and everybody goes into the Lord, goes to sleep, right? Then the next, when Brahma awakes, then he again creates everything. And so then again, then all the planet systems, everything is there, all the living entities and all that. Does that make sense? So it's something for him that goes on every day. So. So that's why the Shastra, this means in your Purana, your study of Purana, there's five main, five main topics, like that. So you have creation, which we described before as the primary. Then you have recreation, which means the secondary creation and its dissolution and recreation. Because recreation means what comes and goes. The primary creation is done once, and it's the blueprint for the whole thing, and it always remains. Everything acts that it's in the way that it acts because of this blueprint. Right? A dog always acts as a dog because the concept of dog, the dogness is already established by Krishna in the primary creation. So that means every dog that Brahma creates will have that dogness. So then at the end of this night when it's dissolved, but when in the morning when they're recreated, again the same dogness appears. Does that make sense? So Brahma is he's manifesting the gross situations which we are in. In other words, the body and the situations that we're in. But why they act that way, that's established by Krishna. Right? So that's why Prabhupada says, even though he's the creator, he's the engineer. He's not actually the creator. The actual creator is Vishnu. Is he not bored?
Same thing in the morning, and he wants to see again the same stuff.
So you're not bored getting up in the morning, going in the mirror, looking, getting up, brushing teeth, washing a little bit, then, oh, hey, there you are. You know what I'm saying? So that's what Brahma does. That's his nature. He is the creator. You know what I'm saying? Just like a cook likes to cook, so creator likes to create.
He cooks different things, and sometimes he cooks, sometimes he does something else.
Well, no, if you don't cook, you don't eat.
That's only part of it.
Well, he has other things he does all day. Sits around, runs court, listens to music, has lunch, hangs out with his family.
A couple of hours?
Not necessarily. It's all done by meditation, so I'm sure it's not that long. Right? Because everyone's got to get in the 12 hours, and so he'll wake up in the Brahma Muhurta, so then you get your little bit of, his little bit of time to himself, and then you do your creation and everybody's there and running around. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're looking at... Let's go a little bit deeper, okay? Do you ever get bored of variety? No. So he doesn't get bored of creation. You understand? Variety is the feminine nature. So you never get bored of it. You know what I'm saying? Just like the man, he goes to work every day, stops at the same coffee shop, sits in the same chair, drinks the same cup of coffee, orders it from the same guy, eats the same donut, and you come back 20 years later, he's doing the same thing. He's not bored. You know what I'm saying? But that's what makes women interesting, is they create variety to that. But not at his morning coffee at the shop. That leave alone. You know what I'm saying? That's going out to dinner, this and that, like that. You understand? So it doesn't mind. So just as the woman won't mind variety, or a child won't mind playing. Like the child can get up every day and play. And the parents are thinking, how do they do that? They just get up first thing, they're already playing, right? So that's because that's the nature. So nature, no one minds. You understand? So creation, Brahma doesn't mind, because that's something he does. Just like the artist doesn't mind painting, or the writer writing, or, what I'm saying? Or the dog barking, right? Dogs never get bored of barking, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's nice. So in other words, if there's a problem there, that means it's a detail. You just go back farther. and then it, and then it.
Maharaj, the Suri Siddhanta speaks of a certain amount of time, and it gives a quantity that Lord Brahma spends in creation at the beginning of the day.
Oh.
Something like about 47,000 years of the demigods, and he sets up all the planets, and then after that, everything goes.
Oh, 47. Okay, so 47 out of a thousand. A thousand?
It's in the order of almost four Divyugas. Because 12,000 years of the demigods is one Chakrayuga.
Yes.
So it's almost four times that much.
Okay, so it's out of the thousand cycles, then basically four of them are spent in creation.
Yes.
Okay? And if you want to know the day that it happens, then that, you can tell them.
We can tell you how many days since then.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think Kali Yuga started on Wednesday. Stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, no, it means just like that. You can't calculate all that stuff. You know when it happened. When, being clothed with subtle particles only, it enters into vegetable or animal seed, it then assumes, united with the fine body, a new corporal frame. So it means that now the subtle body will enter into this new form, and then being in that, now you say they're embodied. Right? But before that, just the subtle body, then they're asleep in that. Because the gross body is simply a manifestation of the desire of the subtle body. Right? Does that make sense? Right. So, therefore, everything's based on your desire and what you do with the situation you're in. So what you do with that defines what is the future situation, future body. Right? As we were discussing before, that your karma is you have now what you did with your facility previously. And what you do with your facility now defines what will be your facility in the future. Right. Thus he, the imperishable one, by alternatively waking and slumbering, incessantly revives and destroys this whole movable and immovable creation. Like that. Lord Vishnu is the origin of the sacred law. But he, having composed these institutes of the sacred law himself, taught them according to the rule to meet alone in the beginning. Because there was only Brahma alone anyway, so. Next I taught them to Marichi and the other sages. So the Lord is the one, this is the Lord's instruction. Like we said before, is that one can only know the Lord through the Lord's instruction. And that you either get from the Lord or from the Lord's devotee. So this is the instruction of the Lord given to us from Brahma and the other great personalities, right? So Manu, this is specifically what's being defined. Yeah, how Bhrigu will speak of it. Like in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, that's what Narad Muni speaks. Right? Bhrigu here will fully recite to you these institutes, for that sage learned the whole in its entirety from me. Okay, so Brahma spoke up to here, in other words, what he's involved in, what is before anything that anybody else is. In other words, he spoke on what nobody else is involved in. Right? The original creation and the recreation. Right? That's what he does. But now, after that, what you do with that, that then the great sages and the individuals can take part in. But this other stuff, it's just the Lord and Brahma is only the ones involved.
Well, it's called Manu Samhita, so it's Manu's focus. No, it's consistent.
Because
different speakers.
Manu means the how you say, progenitor of mankind. So that's Vishnu, who spoke these institutes. It's Brahma who then heard those and spoke them to his sons. Right? And then it'll be Swayambhuva Manu who will take this and apply it into human society. Bhrigu is just speaking it. Like I'm speaking it now. so it doesn't become my Sanhita. Does that make sense? Manu means the element that this is the direction for mankind to follow. Does that make sense? So who's speaking it, that's another thing. But who's going to apply it into your life, then basically that's the 14 manu. So now we're in Vaivasvata. Right? So he's the manu who's taking care of that these things are being appreciated. Right? But in Kali Yuga, no one much appreciates, so I guess, I'm not sure, maybe it's vacation time or something. Right? No, Kali Yuga is there because, see, everything is created because that's the living entities want to taste the variety of elements. So the point is everything's made up of the combination of the modes, so depending upon the modes, you get a particular species and that has a particular situation. Just like, let us say, you know, it probably gives the example of the high court judge. So now, when he's in that official mood, then you have courtrooms. Right? You know, they're not just sitting on the side of the street on some step somewhere like that. And when people walk by, they say, hey, this is our block and stuff like that. You know, go around. You know, we're having court here. You know, he has a nice courtroom. Right? But when he's relaxed, then he has his home. You understand? So the situations match the particular mentality and the work that goes along with it. Right? You know, if you didn't have space and trees, then it's really tough for birds, right? If you just have an ocean, birds don't do so well. But fish would do great. Does that make sense? So it's the mode. So you take, you know, 3 times 3, you get 9 times 9 is 81. Right? And then you just keep multiplying that, you get 8,400,000. So what Krishna is giving is that full variety of tastes of every possible aspect that there could be. Right? And so it's way beyond what we generally worry about. Right? So, but it's complete. And so having gone through all that, one can say one has tasted all aspects of material existence. So then one could now say, I'm not so interested in this anymore. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
Yeah. Just wanted to say that, can we say there, that in Kali Yuga there are predominated species kind of different than in Sati Yuga?
No, it means you have, you just, all it is your more noble ones drop out. You know, like you don't see makaras, you don't see yalis. You know, good thing we don't see yalis. Yalis are, you know, you see them on temples. They are lions that have an elephant nose, and they exclusively just eat elephants. But when you see them, the elephant is rolled up in its nose. You know, like these, the elephants here pick up the potatoes and roll them up in their nose. They catch, you know, elephants like that. So they'd probably be about as big as this building. So you wouldn't want them around either. Right. So it's just these more noble species. You don't see them in these ages like that. You know, these big Cheyenne eagles, you know, they fly from planet to planet, so they stay out there, you know, like that. Demigods don't come around. It's just the time when there's the opportunity of people don't want to follow the Vedic culture, and they just, you know, want to really, how you say, I don't know, we call it slumming it. They really want to slum it, you know. Then this is the age, you know. Right? Some are more sophisticated in the slumming, some less. But the main thing is, you know, the garbage all over and the pizza boxes all over the living room. But it's just a matter, you know, where did you get your pizza boxes from? That's the difference, you know. And what kind of furniture it's sitting all over. That's the, does that make sense? So, Sati Yuga is for those who are, you know, in that mentality more pure. But every soul goes through the cycle. So it's not that there's just some there. They're the one that's, you know, very engrossed in Kali Yuga after, you know, spending, you know, 100,000 lifetimes in Creamy Bojan and all those kind of things. He may be, you know, the person in Sati Yuga as the cycle goes around. Does that make sense? Yes.
When somebody gets initiated, this kind of Prabhupada's mind, they generally have to give a commitment that they're going to chant 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra and all four regulated principles.
Right.
It's the Maha platform for pretty much pure goodness, certainly holy goodness.
It puts them, if they're acting within that, definitely that.
Okay, so then, but you're talking about that there's all kinds of different people. There's different, you know, 8,400,000 species of life, and then within the human species, there seems to be...
There's 400,000, yes.
400,000 of those. So we have this sort of blanket program for everybody to be the mother of goodness.
Yes.
But that is, but you have people that are various modes, you know, they're a different mixture.
Right.
For some people, it seems real easy to be...
Yeah, that's just due to previous activities, that's all. It's just due to what their previous activity, they're more inclined towards goodness and some are not.
Are they all potentially coming up to goodness, or is it something...
No, the point is the soul, by nature, is God-conscious. That's their natural position. Human life is meant for elevation. But the point is you're given that natural propensity towards pious or impious depending upon your previous actions. So if your tendency is towards impious, then that is the contamination that's there. You know what I'm saying? If the tendency is towards pious, that's the contamination. Because we're used to dealing with impiety. I've seen people, they're so pious, they can't be Krishna conscious. I remember one devotee, his wife, she's a strict devotee of Lord Ramachandra. She will not have anything to do with Krishna. Because Krishna is immoral. He goes out, dances with others' wives and that. She just can't handle that. She won't have anything to do with it. But she's, you know, very, you know, strict devotee of Ramachandra. So there the piety is getting in the way of Krishna consciousness. You understand? We're used to impiety because of the background. But if you spent time in India in these like cultured families and that, you see most of the problem with why they're not Krishna consciousness is their piety. They get what it says, they become, one becomes conditioned to the mode of goodness. That's what's going on. The Hindus are very supportive, give money, come to your programs, chant and all that, and go home. And because there's no problem, they're happy. They follow the rules, everything's nice. So they don't see that urgency. But if they did take it up, it would be so easy for them. Because for them, regulated life, sadhana, cleanliness, etiquette, is all, that's just what they do. You know, so Prabhupada said they're very close to Krishna, but they have their back to Krishna. While the Westerners are very far away, but they're facing Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the Westerners culturally have great problems, but philosophically they don't. Because they see the need. Well, the Hindus is that they don't have any cultural problems. It's just they don't see the importance of the philosophy in getting into so much because everything's so nice. You know what I'm saying? So we tend to look at it only at the impious elements, but the pious is also there. So, yeah?
To make everybody potentially pious?
It's not a matter of piety in the way of material. It's a matter of engaging whatever your nature is in the Lord's service. Like Hanuman's a monkey, but he engages that in the Lord's service. You know, Garuda is a bird. He engages in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the main thing. Like that dog of Shivananda Sen, he was a dog. So he engaged in devotional service. So he went back to Godhead. Yeah, you still act like a dog.
So, regarding to culture, so can we engage different culture into service of Krishna?
Can you engage different culture? Yeah. Well, first you have to define if it's actually culture.
Like we have Western culture and Chinese culture. And
no, that's what I said. You have to first define if it's culture. Like when, after Mahatma Gandhi visited England, he came back. Someone asked him, you know, what do you think of Western culture? And he said that would be a good idea.
Yeah,
Does that make sense?
Well, he's talking about like the way people in China do things, the way people in Europe do things, the way people in America do things. People in South America do things. They have different kind of clothes, nuances, different kind of songs, dances, ways to get together, parties, holidays. I think that's what we should do.
So you mean like, you know, everything gets tossed into the big pot, you know, anything that dies in the village, and then every year at one point then they open the spigot and have a party.
Like one Maharaj in China, he always say that if you don't give up Chinese culture completely, you cannot go back to God, you know, something like that.
It's not a matter of giving up Chinese culture, it's a matter of giving up attachment to karma and jnana. Means you can't be Chinese and go back to Godhead. You have to be Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead. Chinese is a situation. You understand? If you identify with the situation, then you want to stay in that situation. Right? If you don't identify with the situation, you only engage the situation. Does that make sense? Because when you say culture, then, you know, what is it? I mean they have it means it's, you know, they're famous for their Peking duck. So how you're going to engage that in Krishna's service? You know what I'm saying? So you're going to have to stick to the vegetarian side. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is what is useful, you use. What's not useful, you don't use. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
See, in other words, here is that we're starting from the principle. Start from there. Because if we're gonna just discuss on detail, then as we progress through these pages, it'll only get worse. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the idea is that what can be engaged is used. Like the Chinese are respectful to their parents, so you're supposed to be respectful to everybody. So at least they're respectful to their parents. So that's a start. That's nice. From that, you can learn respect for everybody. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But it's just like you want to take in their administration, you don't find many Maharaj Yudhishthirs. You know what I'm saying? You have a revolution there, 70 million people die. Right? That's, you know, more than died in, you know, World War I or World War II. You know what I'm saying? And that's just in one country, in one area. You know, we're talking about, you know, South China. We're not, you know, Mongolia, forget about that, or what's out, you know, in Xi'an. And, you know, no, that's just in that area, 70 million. So is that engageable? But that's the culture there. As soon as you're in charge, you wipe out everybody else, right? You have the rule of the what is it, the circle of 10? This guy did something wrong. You kill him. He's one. His wife, two. His children, three. His parents, four. You know, their relatives, five. You know, grandchildren, six. Any of their relatives, like that till you get 10. There's nothing left of the family. Are we going to engage that in Krishna service? No. You understand? So, therefore, the point is those elements that are useful, you use. Those that are not, you don't. You understand? In other words, that which is useful, that's in line with the principles of Krishna consciousness, you use. Does that make sense? Like that. Because that's what's available. You use what's available. Right? If Chinese spinach is available, you cook that. You know, but you're over here, now Bengali spinach is available, you cook that. You know, because spinach is good. You know, But, you know, all the other things that crawl around and go bump in the night, those you don't cook. Right? Does that make sense? I mean, unless you want to make them out of tofu, but still. Just don't make cows or something.
Even imitation cows?
Yeah, no, you don't.
Okay.
But it does mention that if you're really attached to it, make imitation, you know, meat and then eat that. So that Chinese thing of doing that, that's actually shastra.
So it's good, actually. It's engaging.
It's not good, it's okay. Does that make sense? In other words, it works. It may be good for you, but you have to remember you're offering to Krishna. So for him, the form is not... It's not the form Mother Jashoda would offer him, let's say. You know? So therefore, it's simply your devotion of offering it. But, you understand? So that's good. It's fine. It works. Spiritually, you'll advance and everything like that. But there's also the stage of offering what Mother Jashoda or Radharani or the others would offer to Krishna. So you get both the element of you're offering with devotion and you're offering what they offer. So you get the double benefit. That you won't get by engaging Chinese culture. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's all. If we cook according to Yasuda's menu, it's impossible in China.
No, so you do the best you can. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is you do the best you can.
So that
means that it's not the Middle Kingdom. That's the only weakness. It's a far off, out of the way place. Does that make sense? It means India's the Middle Kingdom. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know if this makes any sense to anybody else, but Chinese call China the Middle Kingdom. It means it's the center of the universe. But it's not. Because anyway, anything that came there powerful, right, your original king, he came from over here. So you could say it's an extension of the Middle Kingdom, and in that way then it's the Middle Kingdom, yes. Because the culture came from somewhere else.
So if we speak like this, we might hurt the emotion of Chinese people. You know?
But I'm not in China. We're in Mayapur. You know what I'm saying? The point is to understand the principle, and then whatever facility they have, they engage that in Krishna's service. You understand? But what we're trying to discern here is the principle is that the engagement of your facility according to authority is the standard. So that you're engaging it according to authority, that's what makes it good, not because it's Chinese. You know, just like the Vedic, it's not that because it's Vedic, that's what's good. It's because that, what's Vedic, is what is given by authority. It's not something different. You know what I'm saying? It's more direct. That's why it's more ideal. You know, but the point is Mother Jashoda cooks what's available. She just has a lot more available. You know what I'm saying? But you cook what you have. You know what I'm saying? But if we're attached to it because it's Chinese, that will be a problem. But if it's a matter of what we have, we cook for Krishna, and it happens to be Chinese, then it works. Does that make sense? In other words, the point is pleasing Krishna. So in the beginning, we engage whatever is our local. That's what Rupa Goswami mentions, that in, you know, cooking things for Krishna, you can offer local delicacies. You know, not just, you know, everything, not the, you know, one pot, you know, preparation, you know, not the, what do you call it? That's a young pot, one pot preparation. No, that's many pots. Huh? No, it's called, yeah, but what is it called? You know, sitting up out there in the field with the sheep and you make your pot to guyash. That's it. Yeah, so it means you have your different, so maybe that means you, what is special? And within the rules, then as you offer, because those are specialties of the area. And they come from that area. You don't find them somewhere else. So you make those, it's fine. You know what I'm saying? It's mean, the devotees, what are they offering? You know, the bauza, the jauza, some noodles, some this and that. They're offering a few preparations. But if you look on a Chinese menu, it's like 10 pages. Right? I remember going to one place, they give you a menu, it's 3 pages, right? In English. But the one in Chinese, for the Chinese, is 10 pages. Right? But out of those 10 pages, probably half a page you could offer. Right? So you stick to those. You know what I'm saying? Because it's, the point is those elements are nice. But those elements generally you find everywhere in the world. You know? And the Chinese have this special angle on that. But the whole full development of the culture is not necessarily ideal. Because even though some things are very finely developed, but what's the purpose of their development? Right? The purpose of the development is simply for gross sense gratification. You know what I'm saying? So the element of control and enjoyment is actually, you could say, more extreme. You know what I'm saying? So, because of the connection, the Asian, so the focus is better, right? The emotional element is stronger, so there's more focus. But that also means, if it's materialistic, it means it's more virulent. So if they want control, it's absolute control. You know, the emperor will kill his wife and his sons to maintain power, right? Generally, even in the European, they'd consider that a little extreme. Though there are cases where they do it, but they're extreme. But in China, it's pretty common. Two brothers fight over one woman, kill the woman. Problem solved. You know, very Nietzsche-ish. You know, Dharma is not really high ranking in the Chinese idea. It's just pure Nietzsche. But it's got philosophy in it that the Western doesn't have. Yeah, Machiavelli, no philosophy. You know, it's pretty gross. And then what's this other guy? Clausewitz. That's the more modern Nietzsche. It means the war stuff. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have philosophy to it. It's just that, well, they have the philosophy mixed in with it, so it's a lifestyle. So you could say that way it's superior. But the point is that nothing's good if it's not connected to the Lord. So therefore, those elements that you could function within goodness, connected to the Lord, then those are fine. But it's not that it's ideal. No, it's just, it works. What are you saying? Because ultimately, the material world is already a compromise. Does that make sense? You understand? The principle is what's important, not that, oh, the Chinese is good or not good. That's not the point. It's the connection to the Lord that makes something good or not good. Does that make sense? That's why this stuff is very hard to understand, because we'll take it by its external form. Right? Because this is just a philosophy and already heard. Touching on. And that was Brahma's discussion. Bhrigu starts, and then it gets a little bit more technical, and then it gets right down into things. That means this is not where the fun. The fun is next week. You know. Does that make sense? That's why we have to understand it's connected to Krishna. That's what makes it work nice. Right? So the Vedic system in its ideal forms, those are, if the environment is that pious, then those facilities will be there. And like Prabhupada said, by the sinful activities of the people, the present means, and this he was talking in the 60s, there wouldn't be any fruits and flowers left. But it's only because devotees are doing devotional service, there are still fruits and flowers. Just so the devotees can offer them to the Lord. But otherwise the karmis, they wouldn't deserve them. Does that make sense? So the point is that the connection to Krishna, that's what makes it nice. And then as close to ideal, you bring it as close as you can. Does that make sense? If I let us say, if I give you a pear, you know pear? The fruit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How will you eat it?
How eat it? Just peel the skin and then eat.
But with what? Your fingers?
Yeah.
When I was last there, I saw an old Chinese lady eating a pear with her chopsticks. And she didn't poke it. She balanced it on there and then ate the whole thing very delicately. That's Chinese. So are you talking about that? That's what you're going to engage? You understand?
Yeah.
So you're not even talking Chinese. You're talking what level of Chinese you're used to. Not what level of Chinese can be considered, aristocratic or dignified or standard. You understand? So therefore, again, it's just back to our conditioning. So you're worried about Chinese, the Americans are worried about American, the Europeans are worried about that, South Americans are worried about that. You understand? So that's the point is that we're attached to what we're particularly conditioned by. It's not that we're willing to, even within our own thing, come up to a standard. The devotees say, oh, we're Westerners, well, why can't we wear pants and shirt? Great, put on a suit. Oh, no, that's too risky. They say, hey, babe, we've got to buy a suit. Right? That's Western dress. No, they just want to wear just what they're wearing, and that's then the perfection of Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? And also when you say Chinese, do you mean like the long flowing silk robes, or you mean the gray, shirt and pants, the Mao outfit that's size 36? Right, you're you wouldn't wear a 42. Right? But everybody wears 36. So even if you're short, you just roll up the sleeves and roll up the head, right? So is that what you mean by Chinese culture?
No,
because what's left of what was the Chinese is that from Chiang Kai-shek that went to Taiwan. And he already kicked out so much it was there before he came along. So which one do you mean? You know what I'm saying? So should it be Cantonese or Mandarin?
Both existing.
Yeah, existing, yeah. But which one do you mean?
I'm from Mandarin background.
Okay, so then, you know what I'm saying? So the point is it's going to be according to the locale what you eat there. You use chili. No, if you go to Sichuan, they do. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you have the local. Why I'm going through this is just so you understand is that when you say Chinese, you mean the Chinese of your area. Like you're north, south?
I mean north now.
North, okay. So that means when you cook your subjis and that, they're all wet and run all over the place. But if you go south, they put stuff in it that doesn't do that. So you know what I'm saying? So these are your particular area and the particular time now. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So therefore it's not any more glorious. It's just a matter of dealing with the conditioning, so it's not any different dealing with the Chinese conditioning as American or European or anybody else. Does that make sense?
It's called traditional culture.
Traditional is taking feet, bending the toes over like this and tying them up. That's tradition. You ever seen the shoes? They're about this big. Why do they do that? Why did the Chinese do that?
Because they want to restrict the women to move.
No.
It's considered nice.
Why? Because when your feet are like that, when you walk, then your butt moves very nicely. You understand? Otherwise, you'd have to learn to walk like that. Because it's like that, then you'd walk like this, otherwise you'd fall over. But models walk like that, they teach them to walk like that. So you could just teach the ladies to walk like that. But they might not, but if you tie their feet up, they have to walk like that. So that's Chinese culture.
It's a part of aesthetic, I can say, you know?
Yeah, so I'm saying, so should we start that up?
The feminine character.
Yeah, but the point is in India, without doing that, the feminine nature is there. They're very feminine. It's a matter of how you deal with the women, then it brings out femininity. Women are by nature feminine. You deal with them a certain way, they become feminine. You know what I'm saying? So if you give them nice clothes, nice food, and keep them in a protected environment, where they don't have anxieties over gain and safety, they're feminine. So what does that better than the Vedic? That's very efficient. You don't have to tie up feet and do all kinds of funny things. Does that make sense? So I'm saying it works, but it means those elements that are there, but what makes it work, what brings it out, is protection. But that's what the Shastras are talking about. But people just follow the ritual. So Chinese culture is just a ritual. What's the purpose of it? Why are they doing it? Does that make sense? That's the point, is that you have to understand the principle. You don't understand the principle, you won't be able to engage in a Krishna service. Does that make sense? Then you can see what of Chinese culture is useful and what's not. Otherwise you have to go through each one like this and like that. But you understand the principle, like we were saying this morning. You understand the purpose of the Vedic, you know the whole thing. So you understand the purpose of the culture. Then you understand. So, are the women being protected? Are the children being educated? Are the old men being protected? Like that. You know, there's no cows there, so you don't have to worry about that one. You know what I'm saying? So, is that going on? If that's going on by that culture, then it's useful. If it's not, then it's not. And then you have to do what will make it work. You know what I'm saying? The form isn't what's important. What's important is the principle that the form is serving. Right? That's where we get into this philosophy. This is where the philosophy means. In other words, if the principle of it is in place, then the forms may be according to the time, place, and circumstance. But when devotees say, it's time, place, and circumstance, but they're not necessarily obtaining the principle. They're just attached to a particular form. That's why they say it. It's not because... They're not saying it because I'm in this place, this is all that's available, so I'll use this to get that principle. No, they're saying is, I'm in this place, I identify this place, I like what's in this place, and I want to use what's in this place, and so therefore if you tell me, it's not right, then I'm going to get upset. That's the problem. Does this make some sense? You're getting somewhere here?
People attach to forms.
Yes.
If we teach Chinese people to respect the parents, if we teach them Veda or Dharma Sastri, they might not accept But if we teach them Confucian script, they say, oh, right, the principle we accept.
Yeah, because but the point is that are you connecting that Confucius scripture to Krishna? If you're not, what's the use? Okay, you have nice Chinese instead of not nice Chinese. Okay, great. See, is you're taking it that if we work on principle, we can't teach Chinese culture. So are you saying that Chinese culture doesn't work on a principle? There are no principles. Is that what you're saying?
No, there is principle.
So therefore, then those principles, you understand, those principles are what we're working with. Those principles are connected to Krishna. That's what I'm talking about. That's the Vedic principle. Right? Because in India, Punjabis eat rotis. You only eat rice if you're sick. Bengalis only eat rice. They eat chapatis when they're sick. You know? Like that. Somebody had a fever in this, you know, for 5 days. And then the day is after, they have this big grin on their face. So what happened? Oh, today we ate rice. Because they've been eating chapatis for 5 days. You understand? So it's, you know, you have all these differences in these areas, even within the Vedic. So that, you know, how you say, you know, the vegetables are half cooked, you know, then, you know, okay, you know, you go a little farther, then it turns into that. It means if you go all the way to the eastern side of India, what do the people look like? They look Chinese. If you hear the Manipuri speak, the tone of it sounds Chinese, but the grammar of it will be Indian. If you go to the other side of India, what do they look like? Yeah, they look like Middle Easterners. Like that, big, or like, you know. You understand? So it's just, everything just expands out of there. So it's not that these elements aren't already there, so it's not a problem. Like the Manipuri devotees, they dress very different than other parts of India. You know, you go to Meghalaya, the women wear what sannyasis wear. You know this Uttariya? They just wear two of them. Of course, that's all they wear. But.
So can Chinese devotees wear in a special way? Chinese devotees can wear in dress in a special way?
Yeah, if you have this special way that Chinese always wear saris, yeah, why not? Is that what you mean?
Like dhoti is too difficult for Chinese, I think.
You know? It's not very common. Dhotis is too difficult. Have you ever looked very carefully at what they used to wear in China? So you're wearing that?
I mean, Chinese.
No, you're wearing European dress.
Yeah.
So that's all. So that's my point. Don't get so much into this Chinese stuff, because most of the stuff you do is European anyway. You know what I'm saying?
No, I mean, we want to return back to Chinese tradition.
The principle of respecting the parents is just one place where you start. You're supposed to respect all living entities. So if you start with parents because they can relate to that, but the Krishna conscious principle is you respect all others and you're not looking for respect for yourself. Okay? So would that be a problem? Would the Chinese have a problem with that you respect everybody else but you're not looking for that respect for yourself? Would that improve Chinese culture? Would that improve it, or it wouldn't? Chinese culture is already so good. Or the Chinese culture is, they'll respect others, but they demand that respect for themselves also. You understand?
I mean,
if you disrespect a Chinese person, what happens? Right?
They will not be happy.
Yeah. But now if you go back in Chinese culture, what happens? He kills you, or you kill him. Right, or he kills himself. You understand? So the point is that's the weakness in the culture. So that they respect others, that's good, but that they expect that same respect for themselves, that's the weakness. You find the same thing in Europe. The people that respect others expect to be respected. Right? Or they don't respect others, but don't worry about respect for themselves. You know, nobody likes the one who doesn't respect anybody, but expects everybody to respect him. You understand? But we're talking about respecting others, not looking for respect for yourself. You understand? So you're using that as a medium to get to, but you're not teaching the Confucius thing, because the Confucius thing is the only things that are of value are the things that are actually in line with the Vedanta. But if it works, that means it's in line with the Vedic literature. So the point is it's taught from the angle of the Vedic literature. Does that make sense? Like, you've been in the morning class, you've been in this class. At one level, does the flavor of it is any different? Is there a difference?
Some.
It means the topic's different. Is the flavor of it different? No. But this is Dharma Shastra. That's direct philosophy. So we're discussing Dharma Shastra on the level of the philosophy of transcendental literature. You understand? So if you want to discuss Confucian, fine. But amongst devotees, we can discuss Gita. People who are not devotees, you talk Confucius, great. But if you ask the government in China, someone who discusses Confucius is not supposed to be in China. They did try to do their best to kill everybody who was connected with the Confucius, you know, books and philosophy.
Well, now it's changing.
Huh?
Now the government embraced Confucian, you know, they want to...
Yeah, because they figured out it's good for making money, that's why. We understand here is that the reasons that they're doing it, it's just Chinese is a way it manifests through what was available there. But now as everything's there, you walk down the street, what are they wearing, right? They're wearing all the European fashion houses, all the billboards. Whose faces are on the billboards? Not Chinese, European models. You understand? So they're just using what's available. So you give it another some time, and you know, you won't see much Chinese. I mean, you go to America, a lot of people eat Chinese food. You know, and they like wearing a Chinese shirt or something like that. This probably, you know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of time. It's just using what's there. So when it was on its own, that's how it developed by those modes. Now the modes are different. So it's changing. So it's just, all it is how the world uses their facilities, then they have their angle how to use it, and they like certain aspects, and certain aspects they don't. Like everybody likes the European factories, and the money, and the economics, and you know, all the social elements of it, but they just don't like how they interact person to person. Right? So that's the only thing that's actually the Chinese consideration, right? Does that make sense? Because, you know, most people like to, you know, live in their modern house and modern car and everything like that. They don't want to live in a traditional Chinese house. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's just a matter of the culture means how you interact with others. Now, the Vedic culture, that is saying how you interact and the consideration of others and everything, that's what they're looking for. It's what everybody's looking for. So it's universal. Vedanta is universal. That's why we're presenting this way. Does that make some sense? So to the devotees, it's just you're just discussing the Krishna conscious philosophy. And they use whatever they can in the situation they're in. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so it's not a matter of Chinese or this or that, it's a matter of what's there. You know, if you're in Beijing and you tell everyone, no, you gotta put cornstarch in your sabjis, they'll go, what do you mean? you know, or go down to, you know, to Guangzhou and tell everyone don't put it. You know, there'll be a fight. They're saying, so that's, you're not, that, so you're discussing with me as if that's the level where I'm talking about. I'm not. The point is whatever's there, you use that. That's the principle of Vedic culture. It has its ideal forms, but the point is use whatever's available, right? Whatever's not unauthorized. You know, in other words, what is okay, use that. It's not that that's great. What's great about it is it's connected to Krishna, but it itself is not necessarily great. You know, does that make sense?
Could I say the same way that we say that there's only bhakti? If you take karma separate and jnana, you have two separate things, but they're part of the knowledge.
Yes, yes.
Culture is one, but if you disable some elements, you get this diversity.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you could say that. It's just that they, you know, overemphasize a particular element or something like that. You know, it's just like, I mean, if you look at it in a humorous way, it's just that they don't want to. They're very busy, you know, like that. So they don't want to spend much time cooking. So you only half cook the vegetables. If you go farther east, they don't even cook them at all. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, they eat everything. They eat their fish raw. They don't have the time to cook it. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, the point is this, there's some basic underlying principles. Because of those things, that's why the culture developed in that way. So they're emphasizing something. So the Vedic is this natural, balanced form. That's why it's so strange to everybody else, because no one's used to that balance. They're used to overemphasize in one way or another. You know? Does that make sense? Like, I remember I was in South Africa. And you know, somehow or another there, because of the connection between the Indians and the Africans. So then they cook a lot of beans. I mean, variety of beans. You know, your I don't know, all these different kinds of beans, big ones, small ones, flat ones, round ones, all these different things. So went to one program, and there were 9 kinds of beans, right? Along with the rice, and I think, you know, puris or chapatis, whatever it was. I asked, where's the sabji? And they pointed at the beans. There's the sabji. What are you talking about? You know, so it's just somehow or another developed that's what they cook. You know, but it's not against the Vedic principle. It's just they overemphasize, you know, dal has a place, you know. But they just, you know, that's the meal. You know. Does that make sense? You know, so each culture, you know, emphasizes one aspect because it's available. You know? Like here you see rice, you go far, the other places you see wheat, you go up north, in Nepal you see corn. So it's just what's available, and that's how the detail will go. So that's not what Manu's dealing with. That's the mistake, is we try to catch those things and apply it on that level. But that's not what it's being said. We have to remember, this discussion here is technically for Brahmins and Kshatriyas, because it's the principle on which it will be applied. Does that make sense? Yes.
There was said that some people are attached to Sataguna, so they cannot worship Krishna because they are too attached to.
No, they're attached to a particular aspect of. Is they may be in Sataguna, but the point is that's not necessarily. They're attached to rules. Like Krishna and Dwarka is not dancing with the gopis. So then they stick to that. They're attached to rules. They should function within rules.
So that means that those rules are maybe not so good after some level?
No, it's a matter of, it's a different taste.
Yeah, I don't understand this.
Rules. Somehow I never thought these conversations would come up at this point in the discussion. Like that. rules are there so that the principle that you're trying to, that the rules are trying to express is obtained. Just like, let's say, I want to teach you cooking, right? But in the beginning, I have to teach you recipes. You will catch recipes. But as you continue, you start to see what's being taught is the method of cooking. So that means then you can take anything and put it together in any way. But in the beginning, you'll see, oh, this is a recipe. You have to follow it like this. And if one thing's missing, oh, then we're, you know, we can't do anything. Does that make sense? Right? But it's the point is the principle of cooking. Because you can't guarantee what you'll have. If you know how to cook, then when you walk into your kitchen with whatever you have, you can cook with that. But if you only know recipes, if something's missing, you can't cook. You understand? So that's the problem. We're trying to learn cooking here. We're trying to learn culture here, not the particular recipe of culture that we call Chinese or European or American or Latin or like that. Does that make sense? Because that's just a particular application. You have those elements, use it. Does that make sense?
That you mean Vedic culture is just a principle, abstract principle.
It's not abstract, it's real. It's substance. That's the substance. It's the form that is the transitory element. The principle always remains. The forms change. You know, just like you said, Chinese culture. But the Chinese culture today, you go back some time, and that's the very culture that the revolutions were necessarily fighting. You know what I'm saying?
So can we say that the traditional Chinese culture is also a form of Vedic?
It's not a matter of it's a form of Vedic. It's a matter of you have elements that are based on those principles. So everything is an extension of the Vedic principles. It's just a matter of the Vedic, it's scientific, while the other is not. Okay? Okay, we'll have to end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki. Are we catching this? So we can get through this one, it'll make the whole rest of the work easy. Because this is actually the major flaw in our understanding. Because we can't differentiate between principle and detail. Because once that's clear, then the rest of it becomes very easy because we just understand the principle behind it, why it's being done. And then we'll know how to apply it in our particular situation.